Yes, we are backstage with the composer Iman Habibi, and this is the world premiere of your piece, Jeder Baum spricht. Congratulations. Bravo.
Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to be here working with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Such an amazing group. It's a dream come true.
This piece, I understand, was commissioned by the orchestra. It was to be in dialogue with Beethoven for their celebration of Beethoven's 250th anniversary of his birth. What does it mean to be in dialogue with Beethoven?
Well, there are pieces written in dialogue with all the Beethoven symphonies, so the orchestra is doing all the Beethoven symphonies, and my piece happens to be in dialogue with the Beethoven's 5th and 6th symphonies. And what does it mean to be in dialogue with Beethoven? Well, we have this absolutely giant of the musical world. We can sometimes take giants like Beethoven for granted because we've known these classic pieces for so long and we've played them so much. We kind of know the music, and it's difficult to look at this music with a fresh perspective. And I think that's what I hope I can do with my piece. So both of these symphonies are in some ways inspired by nature. The Pastoral Symphony, obviously, is that's the main topic. And Symphony Number 5, it was also very much assumed that the motif of that symphony, the so-called fate motif, was actually inspired by the Yellowhammer song that Beethoven would have heard in the parks in Vienna. So having both of these symphonies inspired by nature, I thought, well, how would Beethoven, as an activist himself, have felt if he was alive today and he was living the climate catastrophe that we're living today? How would he have felt, and what would he have wanted to say, seeing the nature that inspired these classic pieces having come to ruins and basically being on the verge of destruction? And so I'm hoping that my piece can allow us to look at these two symphonies through that lens.
So the dialogue reflects non-musical ideas as well as musical ideas.
Yes, for me, the things that I take from Beethoven that are meaningful to me is the idea of a composer as an activist. And I think that's something that I wanted to do with my piece. The idea of going from something that is diverse, that is all over the place, to this sense of unity.
I understand the phrase, the title of the piece, comes from a phrase that Beethoven had written in a notebook. So what drew you to that phrase?
Yeah, so I was reading a lot of Beethoven's sketchbooks. This particular phrase is so meaningful. So he says something along the lines of Almighty in the forest, every tree is speaking through you. One of Beethoven's biographers notes that it's so significant that he doesn't say you are speaking through every tree, but that every tree is speaking through you. And there's that kind of reversal there. But the idea that climate change is affecting us everywhere, all over the world, and that every tree, every one of those trees that is dying, that is burning, has so much significance and can help so much towards keeping our planet healthy. That's kind of the idea behind that title.
So tell us how the piece evolves.
The piece has an unspecific narrative for me personally. So it kind of starts with the recognition that the alarms are ringing and something is wrong. Then from there, we have this very unsettling passage where it's kind of panic-ridden, this realization that, you know, what can we do about this? And then again, there's that trying to accomplish something, trying to help towards reversing climate change, but not quite being successful. We keep trying to achieve something, but we don't quite get there. It kind of builds up from there into a passage that I have marked in the score as drown in sound. So that's kind of the realization for me that it's too late, that we can't reverse climate change. And it kind of a slow, long, something that resembles a funeral march follows that. And it's kind of a cry for help from nature for me. And that builds up to this vision of hope, because I think it's important not to have a defeatist attitude towards climate change. We can't just sit by and say, well, it's too late, we can't do anything about it. I think it's important that we take action and have hope that we can at least slow down the process. So that's kind of a quick run through of the piece.
Do you find yourself using particular instruments or specific musical techniques that speak to Beethoven?
Yeah, there's that general idea of kind of going from diversity to unity that we talked about. There's also some motivic elements. So I do use the kind of rhythmic motivic element that starts the Beethoven Fifth that is kind of put in various places in almost an unrecognizable format all over the piece.
You mean the bum-bum-bum-bum?
Yes. That's kind of put all over the place. Yeah, there's certain parts that the language resembles that of Beethoven.
Like in Beethoven 6th, he uses clarinet, flute, and oboe as bird calls. Mm-hmm. Is there any parallel in your piece?
It's not a bird call for me. There's a motivic element that happens in the orchestra earlier on, and it happens in the clarinets in kind of a diminished form of it, and then it also happens in the solo part in the clarinet. And for me, that's kind of a look at the past and a look at my heritage as an Iranian. So there's a bit of a flavor from the music that I grew up in that passage as well.
Let's talk a little bit about your background, because you were born and raised in Iran. Yes. And your father was a chemist and your mom an English teacher and translator. How did you become drawn to music?
That's a great question. So I was born in the middle of the Iran-Iraq war. At that time, life was very much about survival. I was about four years old when the war ended. And even after the war, the economic aftermath of the war for the country was catastrophic. So music education wasn't really on anyone's mind. And the Iranian government is very conservative, and they discourage music education as well. So we had a little Casio keyboard, one of those 40-key Casio keyboard that my mom had bought at some point. And my parents basically found me going to this keyboard. It was my favorite toy, if you will. And just going in there, and anything that I heard, if I heard a piece on TV, a song, I would just try to play it very unsuccessfully, but I would do my best to play it. So seeing how passionate I was about going to this and making things up, at some point they decided to get me a piano teacher. And it's difficult even to find piano teachers in Iran. There's kind of an underground community. It's not that music is illegal, but it's discouraged and it's very difficult to pursue. So to give you an idea, when I was in my middle school, which was a religiously conservative school, I was kind of miming the fingering for one of my piano pieces on my school desk. One of the teachers found me doing that. But basically, when he found out that I was studying piano, he called my parents to school. He prepared this contract saying it's either piano lessons or your school, your education. So we had to sign this form saying that I'm going to quit piano lessons in order to stay at school. And obviously I did not quit piano lessons because I'm here, I continued playing. But that's the kind of environment. So I had to keep my music studies a secret from the time I was 12 until I left Iran when I was 17.
So when did you first learn Western classical music, and what music were you first drawn to?
So it was through my piano teacher that once my parents got me a piano teacher and he was introducing me to a lot of classical music, I had almost no recordings of classical music throughout my time in Iran. I had very little access to recordings of classical music. So most of the classical music I came to know was through buying a score, putting it at the piano and playing it very old-fashioned way.
You could buy a score?
Yes, you can buy scores, definitely, yeah. And also my piano teacher had a massive library of scores that he had hoarded over the years, and he would just photocopy it for us whenever we needed one. And he also had some recordings. So if he gave me a Chopin waltz to play, he had a recording of Christian Zimmermann playing the Chopin waltz, which he could put on a tape for us and to listen to. So there was most of the music that I grew up with was through the piano pieces that I played. And classical music for me became a kind of rebellion, because that was my music. It was music that nobody around me understood, nobody around me was interested in, and the fact that I felt like I was the only person that was chasing this music and was interested in it, it made it mine, and it made me different. And I think so. It was in a way a way of rebelling against the norm for me.
So, what composer do you feel closest? Is there a composer that you go to now on a regular basis?
When I was younger, Chopin was my world, because I played piano, obviously, and he writes so well for the piano. Beethoven, obviously, was a big influence. I have to say, when I was younger, I didn't really understand Beethoven's music. My first great introduction to Beethoven was through a book, I think it's called The Art of Playing Piano by Heinrich Neuhaus, who was Sviatoslav Richter and Emil Gilels' piano teacher. And he says in there that when he was a teenager, he could not technically play Beethoven sonatas, but he could philosophically understand them. And for me as a teenager reading that, the idea of a composer as a philosopher was so foreign. Composer as being something more than someone who just writes music. And I think that's where I became really interested in Beethoven. What did it mean for a composer to have philosophy?
So what does that mean when you describe a composer as a philosopher or an activist?
basically using music to, music is such a powerful tool. And I think I realized that as a young, at a young age, because of all the propaganda music that I was exposed to, and using that to inspire people to take action against things that matter, and to also convey important ideas, important messages. So this idea of going from diversity to unity that we talked about, that's at the heart of Persian poetry and Persian philosophy. So in Iran, we have some of the greatest poets who ever lived, Rumi, Hafez, Saadi, and that's very much at the heart of Persian philosophy. And you can find that all over Beethoven, and that's something that's really fascinating to me.
So in this piece that we've just heard, it's really influenced by a lot of things.
Yes. To put it simply, it's influenced by everything that makes me me. So whatever has brought me to this moment. So I grew up with a lot of Persian traditional music and the propaganda music that I was exposed to, and the Persian pop music. But then I had most of my training in Western classical music. So all of that kind of brings you to this moment. And I don't really try to push one over the other. I just let all that music run through me. And then whatever comes out is what comes out. So that's the idea.
That's great. So is it possible to say what music means to you at this point in your life?
I think it's a very powerful way of kind of exploring who I am as a person. I think for me, the process of composing, so sitting down and with an empty page and just looking at what is going to come down, it's a way of looking inside yourself with this really powerful tool that is music, and kind of discovering who you are. So in a way, it's a tool for me to discover who I am. It's a necessity. At the same time, I think it's something with which I'd like to do the work that I do as an activist, as a cultural ambassador, coming from two different cultures and kind of trying to bridge the gap in this time where there's so much tension between Iran and US. I feel it's so important for me as someone who's given a platform that is kind of a universal platform, music, that so many people can understand it, to use that platform to bridge that cultural gap and to unite us again.
Oh, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us, Iman Habibi.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.